many Svarim HaKadoshim, if you will, I think the Sfas-Emes is the one that really brings it home, makes a link between these three things. And the explanation that they give is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with ten ma'amaros. Humanity as a civilization messed it up. And so each of those ma'amaros was ruined. And so in order for Hashem to kind of restart with the Torah was in a sense recreating the world in the ideal way that Hashem wanted. But before he was able to do that, he needed to kind of fix the 10 bastardizations or appropriation that the Umos HaOlam had kind of corrupted the 10 ma'amaros that the world was created by. So that's why Hashem brought 10 makos. So if you line them up, you can try to find similarities between these three sets. Bracious, Dam, and Anochi. Yihi Or, Tzvardeya, and Lo Yeluch Elohim Acherim. So I think some are more obvious than others. Like I said, I wanted to focus on the first set of Bracious, Makas Dam, and the Dibur of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I think they're all somewhat unique. So let's just go one by one. So Bracious Bar Elokim Es HaShemayim Ves HaAretz. The Gemara says that is one of the Ma'amaros that HaKadosh Baruch Hu used to create the world. So what's unique about that one compared to all the others?
That there is actually no Amira.
Yeah. Hashem's not saying it. Hashem doesn't say anything. It says Bracious Bar Elokim Es HaShemayim Ves HaAretz. Hashem doesn't actually say anything. And in fact, there's a whole, and Hashem doesn't even really do anything yet.
There's no verb.
There's a whole discussion in the Rishonim, how do you explain that pasuk? So if you look in source number one, so Rashi says that according to him, other people argue, but he says according to him, the simplest pshat is sort of a narrative of Bereishis Briyas Shamayim Va'aretz. At the beginning of creation, Va'aretz Ha'isaso Vavo V'choshech Al Pnei Sahom, when there was, tov, vo, and darkness, then Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or. Then Hashem said, let there be light. So the first mamar, according to Rashi, isn't even a mamar at all. It's just sort of like an author's introduction. And then Rashi even stresses, V'lo ba hamikra lahoro seder habriya. And the pasuk is an anachronism because it sounds like water came before light, and Rashi says that's impossible, and water preceded Shemayim, Shemayim preceded water, which doesn't make sense. So Rashi goes out of his way to say that Bracious isn't really even a mamar, it's just sort of just a generic introduction. In a sense, it's Hashem just being koveya a reality. You know, the Torah is basically saying, in the beginning, Hashem created the world. That's it. There's no action. There's no Hashem talking. It's just a reality.
So according to Rashi, it's just it's not literal. Meaning he didn't create. We're not saying he created Shemayim and Arts is a phrase, right?
It's like a guy telling a story saying in the beginning when the world was created Hashem right. said let there be light. Yeah. So there's no. Again, we believe Hashem created Shemayim and Arts. That's just right. not what the Torah is saying right now.
I would say that a proof, not necessarily like a proof, but like we see later on that he created land and that he created Shemayim.
Right,
so
exactly.
It's like to say he created Shemayim and Arts, so then, you know, day two is the Rakia, right? And day three is land. So it's like, it would be repetitive otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, Rashi quotes that. I ran out of space to quote the whole Rashi. But Rashi basically says that idea, that it can't be taken literally. So, you know, unless Rashi says that the simple pshat disagrees with Chazal, which Rashi doesn't like to do, what you have to say is that the first Amira of Hashem was just kind of setting the tone for creation. And that's also true with the first of the Aseres Hadibros, of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. There's a famous discussion whether that's a mitzvah or not. You know, what is Anochi Hashem Elokecha? It's faith in God. You're supposed to believe in God. So there's a homachlokas as to whether that's a mitzvah or not. If you look in source number three, the Ramban, he quotes the Bahag, and the Bahag doesn't count it as a mitzvah. The Rambam does, but the Bahag doesn't. And so the Bahag doesn't say why he doesn't quote it. Excuse me. And the Ramban suggests V'hanira midaita shabal halachos she'ein minyan taryag mitzvos el gzeirosav yis'ale. She'gazar aleinu lasos u'mina'anu shelo nase. Because it only deals with actions. You know, either do this or don't do it. Aval ha'emuna b'mitziyuso yis'ale she'hodia osanu aleinu ba'oso zumovsim b'gilei shechina le'einenu. But God's existence that he showed to us through wonders and nature and miracles and revelation, that's the foundation for mitzvahs. That's not a mitzvah in itself. God exists, God revealed himself to us, and therefore we have mitzvahs. So it's a very important central idea in Judaism, but it's not a mitzvah. So lo yimna b'cheshbon, so the Baal Halachos Gedolos doesn't count it. Rav Kreskas in Or Hashem asks another question where he says that it's circular logic. How can you command somebody to believe in them, in themselves? Meaning Hashem says, I have to believe in Hashem. So why should I have to follow the mitzvah? The only reason why I would follow the mitzvah is because I believe in Hashem. So the prerequisite for believing in Hashem is belief in Hashem. And so Rav Chisdai Kreskas says, you can't have that as a mitzvah. You can say that that's an important idea of faith, but you can't command somebody to believe in yourself. It doesn't work.
Why does the Rambam count it?
So everybody and their cousin tries to come up with an answer. probably the most accepted answer is that the Rambam uses the phrase Yediya. That the Rambam uses the phrase of Yediya Hashem, not Emuna Hashem. Again, you could disagree. But most people say that the Rambam believed that not the faith itself, but the internalization of that faith. Meaning, that it's not just that you abstractly believe it, but that you internalize it in yourself. So like das, of yoda, adam es chava ishto, it connotes a very intimate bond. And so I'm supposed to intimately bond with the reality that God exists. Meaning, I have to live my life with a godly awareness of shevisi Hashem u'nagdi samin. So that's or studying and trying to prove God's existence, whatever it means, basically to make God real in your life. But that's a very, even according to the Rambam, that it is a mitzvah, that's very different than all the rest of the Aseres Hadibros. All the other Aseres Hadibros are predicated on God's belief to either do something or don't do something. But belief in Hashem itself, even according to the Rambam, is just being koveya a reality, like Bracious, where Bracious is... What is Bracious? It's just saying God created the world, and now how did he create the world? It's setting the tone for everything that follows. The same thing is true with Anochi, that Anochi is not a mitzvah unto itself, according to many Rishonim, and even according to those that it is, it's merely just an internalization that is a prerequisite for everything else. Now, Makas Dam is very interesting as well. If you just look at a textual difference between Makas Dam and all the other Makos, so we, when we learned Chumash in school, we learned that there were, you could break it up into three sets of three, plus Makas Bechoros at the end. And the first two of each three sets had a warning, and the third one did not have a warning. And so every warning is basically, send out my nation, and if you don't send them out, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Is the pretty common phrase. But by Makas Dam, it's different. This is the first one. So in source number four, Hashem says, "V'amarte love, Hashem Elokeo Evrim Shelachani Elacha Leimor Shelachas Ami V'Yavduni B'Midbar V'Inei Lo Shemata Adko." Okay, Ko Amar Hashem B'Zos Teida Ki Ani Hashem Hinei Anochi Maka B'Mata Asher B'Yodi Al Hamayim Asher B'Yor V'Nevchu L'Dam. So there's something missing here, or there's something that's different. There's no Imma'ena Talishalayachas Ami. There's no condition. It's a warning because Moshe is telling him that it's going to happen. It's like when Israel is about to do a bombing run on Gaza, they drop leaflets. So they're warning people. But it's not a condition, meaning it's not saying surrender or we'll bomb you. It's saying we're going to bomb, get out. That's essentially what Hashem is doing over here. Hashem is warning Paro, or Moshe's warning Paro, but he's not giving him a choice. So what's the point of the warning? Like, what's the point then?
Well, it says in that pasuk, it says, "Bizot teda ki ani Hashem." So that's the point,
right? I think you're 100% right. That the point is, I'm framing the makos for you now. The warning is not a warning in the sense of conditions, but I'm telling you, what is my end goal here? My end goal here is that you will know that I exist. And so once again, unlike all the other makos, even the ones that were accompanied by a warning, this one was unique in that there was no actual warning. It was just God essentially framing why he's doing all of this.
Yeah. Sorry, this may be a separate discussion, but would he do it for Dom and not for after the first two makos? Because you know the first two makos are the Ramban talks about the difference between an os and a mofes, right? So it's really just a kind of like I don't know how you would describe it, like changing of nature. It's manipulating nature so that either, you know, for multiply and or the dam that, you know, some sort of so the Ramban talks about how the first two makos were that
they just go along with that, like, so, the Mitzri sorcerers, right? They had some variations of those first two makos as well.
So my question is that if God wanted to really prove that it was him, why not use the ones that were really nisim and not a Hello.
Yeah, so I agree with you that the later makos post Tzvardeya were probably a bigger indication of God's omnipotence, and that's why the Chartumim said after Kinim Etzba Elokim.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And so, you know, again, so if you look by Kinim, it says using God's name in vain. So I think that has a there's a certain connection there for what you're saying. And then in terms of you know, Yehirakia, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is establishing boundaries between Shemayim and Earth, essentially showing the distance between him and the rest of the world. But putting that aside, I think you're right. And so I think the point of why he specifically decided to do the first one is because just like the first of the Ma'amaros that was used to create the world and the first of the Aseres HaDibros, it's setting the tone for everything that follows. So yeah, you're right. Ein hachanami, it may have been a better proof for
also,
Hashem to say it later on, and he does. He does say leman teda ki ani Hashem.
Also, just to bring up, right, like, and it's just interesting that Dom is going to be the one that's establishing it. When we also know, just for a parsha ago, that it was one of the three signs for Moshe, that it's establishing, right? Moshe saying, they're not going to believe me. They're not going to believe me that, you know, we're taking you out of Mitzrayim, the whole thing. And, like, the three signs, right, like, established, like, no, like, this is really happening. It was the framework for the Jewish people. Yeah. And that was dumb as well.
Yeah, that's true. I've always thought about that, and I haven't studied it enough to really get a good handle, but you're right. So those signs were primarily for the Jewish people. Moshe did them for Paro, and they didn't seem to work. So now the question is, well, okay, now you're just doing it again, so why is this going to help? So like you said, I think that there were better proofs of God's omnipotence. So the reason why he says it at the first one is to set the tone. Going back to what you said, so why Dan? You know, why is Dam the first Makkah? Why does Dam set the tone of knowing that Hashem exists and Hashem is all-powerful, especially given the fact that, like you both said, that the Mitzrim could replicate it, that it was an os, it wasn't a mofes, it wasn't a nes, it was something, but it wasn't a full-fledged demonstration. So I only, you know, had the first line here that pertains to Makas Dam, but it's a very long piece of a medrash, which we learn when we're kids. It's a Tanchuma, where it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bala Mitzrim Kataksin Shel Malachim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu attacked Egypt, like, with the tactics of a king. And it goes through a whole battle plan of a general that lays siege to a country or to a city. So the first step is attacking the water supply or sabotaging the water supply. So that's what God did. Also, that God, you know, ruined their water; they couldn't drink. So the question that I had is that, well, so what does that have to do with blood? Meaning, God could have dried it up. God could have, you know, made it rancid. There's a million and a half ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have cut off their water supply. Meaning, if Hashem is just trying to act as a general, there are other ways.
So what is specific about dam, again, particularly the fact that the mitzrim could also do it, that kind of drove the idea home of setting the tone for the rest of the makos? I'm curious if you guys have any suggestions. I haven't seen this anywhere. This is just my own idea. So if you guys have them, I'm very curious to hear.
Well, I mean, didn't the astrologers, they use, they saw from Mars, right? Mm. And red blood from Mars. So maybe the fact that God is going to be using Moshe as Moshe Anshel Yisrael for everything, that's why, that's the significance of Dam.
Yeah, so that's...
I don't know if that's too, like...
No, it's very interesting. There does seem to be a preponderance of blood in the story.
Yeah.
You know, you have the sign that Moshe did for the Jews, you have the sign, you have the Makos, you have the Dam of Mila, you have the Dam of Pesach, you have the blood that Paro bathed in with the babies, according to the Medrash, to cure his tzaras. You have, like, what you said about the astrologer seeing, you know, Mars, or that, blood sign that Paro said, Ra'isi, that I saw bad, or probably means the god Ra, which symbolizes the sun or red. Also, in Egyptian culture, Egyptian mythology, the color red is bad. Black is good because it's fertile, rich soil. Red is desert, barrenness. So red is bad in general. And so, again, like you're saying, like it could be that because it's such a strong motif, God used it first. So it could be. I don't know.
Just conjecture.
Yeah, no, it could very well be. I had another idea, which is, what's one of the primary ingredients in blood? Water. You know, when you donate blood, they ask you to drink. You know, they tell you to drink a lot afterwards so you don't get dehydrated. And the reason is because to replenish, or not to get dehydrated, because you to start replenishing your blood, one of the primary ingredients in blood plasma is water. And so there's something very interesting, which is blood, especially in the Torah, but I think in general, it represents life. Ki hadam hu hanefesh, that blood symbolizes vitality and life and chiyus. And the primary ingredient...
We call it shvichas damim.
Right. Like it's killing is killing is shvichas damim, spilling blood. And when you spill blood, you kill somebody. So blood symbolizes life. And the primary, or one of the primary ingredients for that is water. So what's interesting is that God impacted the makor of chiyus, the source of life, and he turned it into life itself, but the mitzvah couldn't ingest that. There's a certain symbolism here that God turned their source of life into a manifestation of life itself. But because he turned it into life itself, into its final form, they couldn't actually imbibe it. You know, the whole vampire thing of drinking blood, like there are actually studies, you know, can you survive instead of drinking water, of drinking blood? The answer is...
There's studies on that?
Yeah.
There are studies on everything.
There are actually studies about it. Can you survive drinking blood? And the answer is not for very long. You can get some nutrients from it, but it won't work for an extended period of time. You're going to need water. The body can't process a finished product. The body needs to have the makar, or the source, or the raw ingredients. And so what God was trying to show the Egyptians is that you might want the finished product, but you can't imbibe the finished product. You need to take the key ingredients. You need to take the tone. You need to take the beginnings of everything and then turn it into and flesh it out into a final product. And that, I think, is at least the way Chazal understood the evil of Egypt. And this goes into, and this is where I wanted to go into a little bit of Egyptian theology here. We see in... you could look in source number, first in source number 6, is from Likutei Maran. So he says that, Sir Nachman says that Bechinas Dam, that blood, symbol, you know, is equivalent to Bechinas Ekya Asher Ekya, which is what God told Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, when he said, after you do the blood,
the sign of blood. What are the Jews going to ask your names? He says, Ekya Asher Ekya, I will be. Which Rashi says is Imo Anochi Bitsara. Which he then says is Bechinas Keser, which is corresponds to the Sphira of Keser, or a crown, which is the first one. And so if there are 10 Sphiros, so the first one that corresponds to Makastam, which corresponds to Anochi, which corresponds to Bracious, is Keser. And now let's look in source number 7. This is the clincher, I think, of where it begins to come together. This is from the Sefer Orator, or the third Lubavitcher Rebbe. It is not his own idea. He gets it from a lot of Kabbalah Svarim, where he says, Shorish Klipas Mitzrayim, hu bechinas Reisha, shu bechinas Keser. So the root of evil is represented by the corruption of Keser. So what does that mean, or where does he get that from? As the Pasuk says in Yecheskel, Hinini alecha paro melech Mitzrayim, I will deal with you, Paro, king of Egypt, hatanim hagadol harovetz betocha yorov, a mighty monster sprawling in the canals by the Nile, which is a crocodile. Asher amar li hayorov ani asisi, the Nile is my own and I made it. You know, just like you imagine you have like a crocodile just like lounging there, essentially owning the territory. So Yecheskel saying to Paro, you or Egyptian society says, I am God. I made this river. It is mine. I own it. And if you see on this picture on the right, there's a crocodile god, which in Egyptian mythology was the god Sobek, which is referred to as the raging one, who takes women from their husbands whenever he wishes according to his desires, but was also responsible for making green the grass in the fields and riverbanks, tying him to procreativity and vegetative fertility. Most notably, he was the god of water, and believed that the Nile arose from his sweat. So again, I don't know if Yecheskel is referring to this element of Egyptian mythology, but it definitely corresponds very well. Sobek was also closely associated with the king and could act as a symbol of pharaonic power and might. And so the image that Yecheskel is trying to create of Egypt, or the evil of Egypt, is that they claim to be in charge of their own destiny. They claim to be in charge of the river, which was the source of everything for them. Egypt doesn't get any rain. That's why Rashi says there are so many canals in Egypt, because their only water source is the Nile. So if you control the Nile, you control your economy, you control your civilization. And so Paro says, I am in charge of this. I made the river. I'm an embodiment of the divine. Essentially, what they're trying to say is we can control our own destiny. And that was a very central theme in Egyptian theology. In the second paragraph over here, there's a concept called ma'at, which people say is related. It's Egyptian. They say that it's related to the word emes, of truth. But what it really means is the rightful order of the universe. To Egypt, Egypt really lived in a very narrow area, only within watering distance of the Nile. A couple miles out, even today, like near the Nile is green. If you go a couple miles away, it's all desert, and nobody could live there. So for Egypt, they lived a very fine line between order and civilization and chaos. And so for them, preserving that order was the most important thing in their society. And the king was meant to be the embodiment of that sense of order and stability. So the gods, you know, the good gods controlled that, and the king was divine in his role of preserving that sense of order. If the king was good, then things were good, and there was order. The moment things began to destabilize, Egyptian society fell apart and they panicked. And so just the Makos in general, what God was trying to show the Egyptians is that you might have this illusion that you're in charge of your own destiny, but it's all up to me. And that's why it says, that's why the whole point is, Leman das ki ani Hashem. So what does this have to do with the symbolism of Dam? I think what it has to do with is that the Egyptians tried to essentially take the final product of life. They wanted to say that we can get the final product without having to deal with all the earlier stages. Like, what does that mean? The sphere of Keser, a crown, symbolizes desire, will, why you go into something. the symbolism when you wear a crown is that it's not you, but it's something that rests above you, that's essentially part of you, but it's not who you are at your core. When a king wears a crown, the king is the person, but the crown symbolizes the idea of royalty. It's the impetus for royalty. And so keser, when you think about it in psychological terms, refers to the reason why you want to do something. So I'll just give an example, marriage. So the way Rav Blachman sometimes describes this when he explains this idea is that, you have your everyday life of married life, and then you have an anniversary. So an anniversary is a day that you celebrate why you went into that relationship in the first place. So there's a certain will and desire, a certain ratzon, a certain ta'anug, those are terms that are associated with keser, that there's a certain desire making you take the next few steps. And so whenever we think of something, we have the action that you're doing and the motivation behind it. So when the Or HaTorah says that the Egyptians corrupted keser, what that means is that they wanted to say, we have this source of life. We have this source of chiyus, the Nile River. But keser means that there's reasons for why God did this. God said, I'm giving you all this source of life so you can serve me. And what the Egyptians said is that, no, we don't want to be at God's mercy. We don't have to, in Yiddish they say tishtel su. We don't have to sink ourselves with God's will and desire in order to achieve a source of life. We just want to get to the end product. And what God said is that that's not going to work anymore. Maybe that worked until Matan Torah, but now that we're starting the process of Matan Torah, you need to earn the good that I give you. You need to earn the life and the water that I give you. And so what God tried to symbolize is that, well, when you try to go for the end product without all of the ratzon beforehand, when you try to just reach and engineer your own society without my values, you might get the end product, but you're not going to be able to ingest it. It's just going to be blood. It might symbolize life. It might be life, but you can't process that. The humanity needs to process the raw values and God's values in order to create life. So that's what I think was unique about Makas Dam, was that it essentially symbolized, just like Bracious and just like Anochi, where they were somewhat different than the others. There was no action by Anochi, there was no action by Bracious, and even by Makas Dam, like you said, it wasn't so much of a miracle that the Egyptians weren't able to replicate. The Egyptians were. Rather, it was essentially setting a reality, trying to be koveya, a certain reality, that I am God, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I created the world, and I am setting the tone for everything that will follow. And so similarly, the point of Makas Dam was not just to impact the water supply, but also to show the whole reason behind why God was doing this. That you Egyptians are trying to engineer your own society without sinking it to the values that gave birth to it, that I gave birth to you when I created the world. And so if you try to cut yourself off from that, you might actually find life, but you won't be able to use it. And so that's why on Leil HaSeder, when we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, we don't really mention Matan Torah. There's maybe like one or two allusions to it. But we don't mention it all that much. Similarly, the custom of saying not saying all of Kriya Shema on Seder night, we stop after the first paragraph. Why? Because the second paragraph talks about Kabbalas HaMitzvos. That's not the point of Pesach. That's not the point of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's not about Kabbalas Mitzvos. It's something much more fundamental. It's Kabbalas Al Malchus Shemayim. It's just, V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, love God and accept him as your king. What happens after that? That's another discussion. But the point is just to internalize that reality and to realize that all of the values that go into the society that you want to create have to be God's, and you can't try to circumvent that.
Can you explain in the mashal, right? So with keser,
yeah.
Right? So the crown is which part of the Egyptian fiat? Like,
so the
and what are they? Are they missing the crown, or they're just going for Keser and not having? That's
okay. So the Arizal says that if you shift the letters of Paro's name, you get Ha'oref. You get the neck,
okay,
or the, you know, the spine, the back of the spinal cord. And so what they say is that the spinal cord essentially connects the brain to the rest of the body, and the corruption of the Egyptians happened by that transfer point of acknowledging an idea and translating that into actions. That's why Paro said, "I don't know Hashem." You know, that das, that translation of a certain reality into values, was where the Egyptians decided to cut God out of the equation. And so Keser, like you said, so the crown, or essentially the agenda, is supposed to be God's agenda.
Right.
And they said, no, we're not doing that. So we're just going to lo yadas Yosef, lo yadas Hashem. We're going to, you can't unknow God. It doesn't mean that we're not going to acknowledge God's existence. Is that we're not going to act like we acknowledge God. You know, that's why it said, that's why Rashi says, Osa es atzmo shelo yadas Yosef. You can't forget Yosef. It's not going to work. So maybe it's a new king, maybe it's the same king. It doesn't matter. Everybody knew who Yosef was. So what it means is that you don't act like it. That act of translation, the Mitzvah decided to cut out of the equation. And so, you know, you could probably describe the mashal of the crown in one of two ways. Either they put on a different crown, or they decided to ignore the crown. Whatever, you know, whichever mashal you can use, it's essentially saying the transfer point was corrupted.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So then, just going back to the blood, then, right?
Yeah.
Like, so their whole idea that transfer point of them saying that they were just saying like we don't. I mean, the idea is saying we want a finished product, right? Mm-hmm. We want the finished product, like we're just going to do what we're going to do, and we're not going to really look beyond why or whatever it is, and like we just believe in ourselves.
Yeah, so we want to have our own value system, and so we can just have the finished product then. You know, if you want to get the raw ingredients, you have to be in sync with God, because God controls that. So they said, well, we don't want that, so we'll just have our own value system, and then we'll just take the end product of life.
Right.
And so once we're starting the Matan Torah process, that no longer works.
Right.
Shkoyach. Yeah. Okay, well, Shkoyach.
Where do you learn Egyptian theology? I'm saying, like...
So, honestly, the first time I read these concepts was when I read Rick Riordan's Cain Chronicles, you know, like the Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
Like, so he wrote in Egypt once. When I was a kid, I read those. That first exposed me to the idea, and then like when I got older, I actually like decided to read more about it. Last year, I was thinking about you know the blood and the mashal, and so then I learned a little bit more about this stuff.
Are you able to do all
of them? I can't do all of them. I have one for Tzfardeya. I have one
next week.
I can. It's less profound. But I have one for Tzfardeya. I'm working on, you know, I have a little bit for Kinim, what I told Eliyahu. And then I have one for Makas Bechoros, which I think is a very interesting one, because Peru Revu is the last of the Ma'amaros. That's not, God didn't create anything by that, ostensibly. God said something. God gave us a mitzvah. God gave us a bracha. It seems like that God is creating a...
It also wasn't the first time, like, he had already said that to the creatures. Like,
exactly.
People have this misconception that, like, we were the ones who were first assigned. No, God said it to...
Exactly. And so, so in order to distinguish between us and the animals, it must be that God's creating, some existential drive within us, not only to procreate biologically, but to create things and to create multiplicity. And the corruption of that is los achmon, is desiring things that are not yours.
Yeah,
makas bechoros is basically, well, when you try to do that, when there's different bechoros, you know, it says,
you know, that there was no house that had no dead body, and so Rashi said because there was so much arayas going around. So when you try
there's
to...
There's still a question on Rashi, like how does that actually...
Yeah, I get it. The point is that when you corrupt that desire, then you need to have a makos b'choros, that not everybody dies, but the first time, you know, b'chor is when you have a b'chor, you are inaugurated into the realm where you can pass on something to somebody else. It's the first time that you're a genuine, that you have a hemshech, that you have a continuation. You know, if you have a friend or you have a spouse, you can give and take with the other person, but you're not really creating something. You know, that when you have a b'chor, that's the first opportunity where you actually create something. Where you create a dynasty, and so that's why that is the essentially the corruption of Peruva. But anyway, so there's, I have for some of them, not all.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, I like to give myself like Parsha homework, that like you think about these things every year, and then every year you add another idea, or you go a little bit further. I mean, you have to give a shiur, you have to set deadlines, but anyway.
So what's next week?
So I think...
I think...